And welcome to the Rick House. Folks, my name is Cyrus Farmer. You are watching and listening to the Stomp the Tea podcast. We have so much to get into tonight. Folks, let me tell you what you can expect to hear. We're going to be talking about continuing our end of summer series regarding iconic sports theme music. And tonight's segment involves one of the very few pieces of music that actually is associated with golf. So I think you'll be able to figure out what that one is if you haven't figured it out already. We're also going to be talking about something I call perfect albums. Which albums actually, in your mind, are perfect and why? So we'll be talking about that as far as music is concerned. And we're also going to be talking a little bit about in fact, I want to lead off with this. You know, I was having a snack the other day, and I was thinking to myself, Cyrus, donuts are basically a guilty pleasure. But what are your favorite three donuts? Now, I can tell you my favorite three, and I can tell you why. But I would love to hear your opinion on this. For me, my favorite three donuts are, of course, the original glazed. It almost doesn't matter where you get it from, but I tend to lean more towards Krispy Kreme versus Dunkin'. And I'll forego both for a mom and pop donut shop. But for me, the original glazed donut is really the best way to judge the quality of any donut shop, large or small. So I like the original glaze. My third favorite donut, the original glaze is my second favorite donut. My third favorite donut is a glaze, cake glazed blueberry donut. Now, obviously, you are not getting the fruit benefits from the blueberry because of the bread and the glaze, sugar glaze, but I just happen to like the flavor of a good blueberry donut. It's pretty hard to beat. But my number one of all donuts, and it's been this way for quite some time, is the apple fritter. Folks, whether it is fried hard or fried semi-soft, the apple fritter with chunks of apple covered in a glaze is pretty hard to beat. I mean, now it can be more of a meal than you're looking for. When you're having a donut, the apple fritter is definitely more substantial than two single donuts. But I will say, for me, the apple fritter's always been a huge, huge, huge hit. And before we get too far into the program, I do want to say, I know we're jumping around a little bit, but it's one of those nights. I do want to say congratulations to Justin Rose on winning the St. Jude's Classic in Memphis, Tennessee, first leg of the FedEx Cup playoffs. It will be interesting to see where the FedEx Cup goes from here. They have an opportunity. When I say they have an opportunity, I'm talking about the broadcast team. I'm talking about golf. If you can get a winner of the BMW, which is leg two of the FedEx Cup's three legs. And it's the last leg that you have before going into the Tour Championship at Eastlake in Atlanta. If you can have someone other than Scottie Scheffler win, it will be fascinating to see if Scottie Scheffler can reel in whoever is in front of him to win both the Tour Championship and the FedEx Cup. I think this would be his back-to-back years. I don't know if you guys know this or not, but I'm not a fan of the starting off with extra strokes under par. I always felt it was just too gimmicky. But if you're going to, you know, use that gimmick, I think you need Scottie Scheffler not to actually have the lead to have the possibility of having an exciting Tour Championship and end of the FedEx Cup. So we shall see what happens, whether or not someone can actually sneak in there. I felt badly for Tommy Fleetwood, but I know he's going to win eventually. And he has a great attitude about, you know, kind of not being able to finish over all these years. I think he is going to win eventually, but it was not last week. Who knows? Maybe it's this week. But on to the show. Folks, as I said, we're going to be continuing this end of summer series about iconic sports theme music. And there is only one piece of music that is associated with golf that is iconic. And that is, of course, the theme music for the Masters. You know it as well as I do. Dum bum, bum bum bum, bum 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 bum. That is been playing when you watch the Masters coverage for years. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about how that came to be, who wrote the song, and how it originated. I have to say, before we get started, there are some people who love that music from the Masters. And let's be fair, it is completely associated with the Masters. You can't think of anything else when you hear that music other than the Masters. For many people, it kind of marks the coming of spring, and, you know, obviously it marks the playing with the first golf major of the year, which most people can't get enough of, especially if you've had a long winter. The song is called, surprisingly enough, Augusta. Augusta, that is the name of the song. A little on the nose for my taste, but that's okay. It was written by a man named Dave Loggins in 1981. It was first broadcast as part of CBS's Masters coverage in 1982. So let me tell you a little bit about how this all came to be. Now, Dave Loggins, before we go too far, Dave Loggins, depending on whether you look at one side versus another, versus another, versus another, is either the second or third cousin of Kenny Loggins. He of Footloose and Loggins and Messina and Danger Zone, that Kenny Loggins. Dave Loggins is his second or third cousin. And he's a songwriter in his own right. He's written for a number of artists. He was very popular in the 70s as a songwriter, apparently, and the 80s. And he's also a member of the Nashville Songwriters Hall of Fame. So he's had his own career for several decades. Good for him. Dave Loggins happened to be playing. This was his first trip, apparently, to Augusta. And he happened to be playing the course, Augusta National Golf Club. And he was so enthralled by the actual course that by the time they got to the 14th hole, Loggins is looking up. He's looking up at the pines. Now, this is not part of the story. This is just my take on it. I'm guessing he was probably not in the fairway, but that's okay. Maybe he was looking at the pines laterally from the fairway, but whatever the case may be. He was looking up at the pines and watching them sway and was just, he was sold hook, line, and sinker from that point on. And literally said he started thinking of the song there on the 14th hole. By the time he finished the round, he had, according to him, the first verse and the chorus in his head already. So this friend, Loggins was playing with a friend who happened to be an attorney. And this friend of his, this attorney friend, grabs a bite with Loggins after the round, of course. But this friend also happened to know Frank Chirkinen. Frank Chirkinen was like a legendary producer at CBS. He's done so many things. Philadelphia guy, by the way, born and raised in Philadelphia. Frank Chirkinen was the producer of the Masters for CBS for 38 straight years. Frank Chirkinen invented the IBF, I believe. That's the earpiece that reporters, sports sideline reporters, news people, they use that to this day. Frank Chirkinen invented that as a way to speak with his people on the course at certain events. So that's Frank Chirkinen. He happened to be at Augusta National that day, and Dave Loggins' attorney friend introduced Dave to Frank. Now, according to Loggins, he asked Frank Chirkinen, he said, have you guys ever considered using a song to promote your coverage of the Masters at CBS? Chirkinen responded, yes, you know, we've been looking for a song to promote our coverage.
Turn off airplane mode.
I have no idea why the phone starts talking when I have it in airplane mode. Anyway, the show is a disaster. Anyway, so Loggins tells Chirkinen, I'm the guy to write the song for you. No one can do it better. Chirkinen laughs and says, let me see what you got. Contact me when you have something. So Chirkinen goes back to Nashville. He records a song. He records it with an orchestra, with a band, and included a 12-piece string ensemble. And he cuts a demo. Now, Loggins pays for the demo out of his own pocket. And he brings the demo to Chirkinen. And Chirkinen really likes the song. Loggins gets paid $3,000 to cover recording expenses and eventually ended up getting royalties, as he says, every now and then. But this song has been played for over 40 years. I mean, it's coming up on 45 years that this song has been played for CBS. If you're Dave Loggins, you have to do a better job of asking for some type of compensation. I mean, you don't have to say, you have to make me a member of Augusta National. No, I mean, nobody's going to do that. But what you can do if you're Dave Loggins in 1981 is say, hey, if you like the song, I'll give it to you, but you got to give me Masters tickets every year. Something, anything. You know, $3,000. It's a pretty good deal if you're CBS. Anyway, Loggins died on July 10th in 2024 at the age of 76. And CBS, since 1982, has only played the instrumental version of Augusta, the song written by Dave Loggins. What do I mean when I say that? Well, as most of you probably know by now, the song that so many of us hear every single year when we're watching the Masters on television, Augusta, has lyrics. Folks, before we go any further, I just want to tell you something from the bottom of my heart. I've never been a big fan of Augusta, the Masters theme music used by CBS. Now, there's nothing wrong with it. It's not a bad piece of music, but to me, it always feels a little precious. It feels a little on the nose. You know, it's like the azaleas, the green grass, the perfect, you know, the perfect greens, the fairways, and no trash on the course. If you're looking for a song to represent that, I think Augusta by Dave Loggins does a tremendous job of it. But for me, Augusta, the song by Dave Loggins, is much more of a representational song of what it feels like possibly to be a member of Augusta National Golf Club. To me, it feels like nothing. It feels nothing even remotely close to what it must be like to play, to compete for a green jacket. I mean, if you're driving down Magnolia Lane, which is very short, by the way, if you're driving down Magnolia Lane, are you going to be playing Augusta in your courtesy car to get pumped up for the round? No, you're not. You're going to be, you want something that's a little more stirring, you know, maybe some soaring strings or something like that. That's what I think the theme music for the Masters is missing. You know, you need more soaring strings, almost like Olympic music, like we talked about last week. Soaring, you don't need brass. You don't need heavy drums, but really soaring, emotional, intense strings, violins, violas, cellos, bass, whatever, I think would really fit in well for the Masters. Because you have people who want to win the Masters, they've wanted to win the Masters their entire lives, and they are striving for something. Let the music reflect that striving. Okay. That being said, I want to read you some of the lyrics from Augusta, the Dave Loggins song that we associate with the Masters. I think this is from the top of the song. Well, it's springtime in the valley on Magnolia Lane. It's the Augusta National and the Masters of the game. Who'll wear that green coat on Sunday afternoon? Who'll walk the 18th fairway singing this tune? Folks, I'm going to give you a little spoiler alert. I think the answer is no one. Most of us have never even heard those lyrics before. And I got to tell you, there's another set of lyrics. You know, he talks about Hogan and Bobby Jones, and they are of the same ilk. A little saccharine, a little on the nose. Apparently, in 2001, he changed one of the lines to his lyrics as a tribute to Tiger. I'm sure roared was in there somewhere. Tiger roared. He also made some changes later to acknowledge Phil Mickelson. I'm sure something about Lefty was part of the lyrics. It's just, I'm not killing anybody as a songwriter, but it just seems a little to me, it's not exactly what I'm looking for. But all that being said, one of the things that is fascinating to me about this entire episode is that you have so many producers and heads of, you know, networks and divisions that we've talked about in this end of summer series about iconic sports themed music who are making these decisions based on their ears. These people aren't musicians, right? What are the chances that Frank Cherkinen hears this song, which he says he likes, to Dave Loggins, and then after Loggins leaves, he plays the music for his staff, and he says, guys, I like the song. How about we do it without the lyrics? You know, I mean, that's exactly what was called for to represent what CBS was doing on their coverage. They didn't need the lyrics that I just read to you a couple moments ago. They just wanted the melody. And for Cherkinen to make that decision, again, just like Rune Arledge making his decision with the iconic Olympics music, like the Fox executive making their decisions. It's really impressive to me how these executives kind of have their hands in every aspect of what they're doing when it comes to their shows, their networks, their product. And it's a lesson. I mean, it just shows you they're not just showing up, turning on the camera, and letting the talent go wild. They are hands-on. They are producers. So it's very impressive. Frank Cherkinen, did a great job. Dave Loggins did a great job. Because certainly, if you heard Dave Loggins, if you heard his song, Augusta, anywhere but on CBS, it would seem strange to you because that's how linked it is to the Masters. If you were in an elevator or you're in a department store or drugstore and somebody was playing bling, 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 you would look up, you look around and say, hey, who's playing the Masters music? I mean, it would be very, that's how closely associated that piece of music is to the Masters. You would never hear it on the radio, you know, unless it's part of the golf, the PGA Network on Sirius XM, their promotion of the Masters. You know, it's so linked to the product. So that is tonight's segment on iconic sports theme music. I thought it was fascinating to myself. I hope and assume you enjoyed it as well. Folks, we do have to talk a little bit about this whole concept that I came up with about perfect albums. I did not come up with it, by the way. I misspoke. People talk about perfect albums, perfect letters, perfect sporting events, perfect golf shots, whatever. Perfect can be an overused word, but I'm going to tell you how I'm using it in this context. What is a perfect album to you? Is it something that is influential, groundbreaking, popular? Is it catchy? I will tell you, for me, perfect album is an album where you wouldn't change anything about it. You wouldn't change the order of the songs. You wouldn't change the tempo. You wouldn't change a single note on this album. You would play it as is and enjoy it from now until you can't listen to music anymore. That's my definition of a perfect album. And I have to say, my version of a perfect album to me may be just an album to you, and vice versa. You know, you may think there's an album that's perfect, and I think, well, it's pretty good, but, you know, I didn't love this song, I didn't like that song. About three of the songs I could have done without, but, yeah, it's pretty good. But to you, it's perfect. And that's the wonderful thing about music. It is so personal, right? No one can tell you how to feel about something you listen to. Only you can tell you how to feel about it. So that's the beauty of music. It is incredibly personal. Now, when I talk about a perfect album, I'm going to give you a couple of examples, right? Purple Rain by Prince. To me, it's a perfect album. Yo Bum the Rush the Show by Public Enemy. Perfect album. Kind of Blue by Miles Davis. Perfect album. The Queen is Dead by The Smiths. Perfect album. So you can see, most people, just because you deem something to be a perfect album, it doesn't mean you can only have one. Most people can name a dozen perfect albums off the top of their head for them. It's part of their personal collection. I'm no different. And those examples I gave you, I would put up on my shelf and listen to over and over and forever and ever. Right? These are perfect albums to me. But I want to talk about three perfect albums in particular and why I consider them perfect. And I want you to see what you think and let me know what you think. So these three albums that are perfect albums, as far as I'm concerned, are Thriller by Michael Jackson, Nevermind by Nirvana, and The Black Album by Jay-Z. Folks, I got to tell you, any of these three albums or the albums that I mentioned prior, I wouldn't change a note on any of these albums. Obviously, there are stronger parts to the albums and there are weaker parts to any album. But overall, as a piece, these three are perfect albums to me. And I'm going to tell you why. Look, one of the things that I use when I think about whether an album is perfect or not, actually, after I deem it to be perfect, one of the things that I reflect upon are three different areas. What was the biggest single? What's the biggest hit from that album, from that particular album? What is, in my opinion, the best song on that album? And then additionally, what's my favorite song of any of the songs on the album that weren't released as a single? So those are the things that I like to do after I deem something a perfect album. And I'm going to go into that with these three particular albums right now. Thriller. Look, I listened to Thriller again, and it had been years, I mean literally years, since I listened to Thriller front to back. I don't want to say it's been like 15 years, but it's probably been at least 6-7 years since I listened to Thriller. I listened to it over the weekend, folks. Thriller's a great album. It's a great album. Nine tracks. Of those nine tracks, seven were released as singles. Obviously, it was, at the time, the biggest selling record in the history of music. So all nine were easily top 10 hits. And Thriller produced two number one hits. Look, it was just a monster album. But I think by anybody's definition, the biggest hit on Thriller was Billie Jean. Billie Jean was number one for 7 weeks. It was the song that Michael chose to debut at Motown 25, where he did the moonwalk in public for the first time. Billie Jean was a monster hit from a monster album. Everyone knew or heard Billie Jean, the song. I have to say, that was easily the biggest hit from Thriller. But there was a number one hit that wasn't Billie Jean from Thriller. And we all know the answer to that was Beat It. I believe Beat It was only number one for 3 weeks. But to me, Beat It is the best song on Thriller. It really shows off Michael's vocal range, which is really impressive, because he really sings at you at times with Beat It, whereas Billie Jean is kind of more of a groove. And, you know, Michael's in his kind of like his, you know, ice blue vocal stance. Well, Beat It, he's gonna come at you full force. And it's, to me, it's just a great song, Beat It. I love Beat It. I love Billie Jean too, but I love Beat It. To me, Beat It's the best song. I have to say, there were only two singles off of Thriller. Remember, only nine tracks on the album. So do yourself a favor. Listen to it this weekend. I think you'll really enjoy it. It's a very easy listen. It's Michael Jackson. Come on. The only two songs that weren't released as singles were Baby Be Mine and The Lady in My Life. And folks, to me, my favorite song that wasn't released as a single off Thriller was The Lady in My Life. Look, it is a ballad. It is a great song. The sentiment is wonderful. So romantic. So touching. I mean, And Michael, again, here is an artist who is completely in control of his instrument. On this song, if you listen to Michael Jackson sing The Lady in My Life, you could literally hear him sing this a cappella, and it will be a wonderful song. That's how much control he has over his voice in this song. It is unbelievable virtuosity. And of course, the music is great, but the lyrics, think about this. If you have a wife, if you have a husband, if you have a girlfriend, if you have a boyfriend, if they said this lyric to you, I think you'd fall in love. The lyric is, and baby through the years, gonna love you more each day. So I promise you tonight that you will always be the lady in my life. Ah, it's a great lyric. And that's the chorus. You know, the verses are sentimentally rich and romantic. So, Lady of My Life, definitely, to me, the best song that was not released as a single off Thriller. Moving on, let's take a look at a band that I fell in love with when they came out. And that band was Nirvana. We talked about this, right? Nirvana's Nevermind. That was released in September of 1991. I was a huge Nirvana fan. I wasn't so much into Pearl Jam or Alice in Chains. I listened to a little bit of Stone Temple Pilots, but I was a huge, huge, huge Nirvana fan. I was always fascinated by the way Kurt Cobain used his voice. I mean, I was like, wow, he's going to blow out his vocal cords. And he was a smoker too. I was like, there's no way he could sustain this over like a 20, 30, 40 year career. Unfortunately, never took the opportunity to do that because of his suicide. But what a performer, what a band, and most importantly, what an album. Nevermind released 4 singles from the album. They were Smells Like Teen Spirit, Come As You Are, Lithium, and In Bloom. Look, I just found out recently, because I have this CD for Nevermind, but I've been listening to most of my music, like most people, digitally these days. And at the end of the record, at the end of the album, there's this guitar-heavy song that keeps playing, and it's called Endless Nameless. And I'm like, what is this song that keeps playing? Apparently, Endless Nameless was a cut that did not make the original pressing of Nevermind. And that was much to Kurt Cobain's displeasure. Kurt was like, always like, this should be on the album, da-da-da-da-da-da, apparently. And, you know, the album that I listened to always ended with Something in the Way, which I think is a great way to end the album. So my review, in my mind, of this being a perfect album does not include Endless Nameless, because frankly, I'm not that big a fan of the song. To me, it doesn't fit with the rest of Nevermind. It definitely seems out of place. Maybe because I did not hear it in context originally as part of the album, but it definitely feels tacked on artistically to everything else you hear on Nevermind. So I wanted to let you know about that. Now, obviously the biggest hit by a mile from Nevermind was Smells Like Teen Spirit. I mean, It was a song that was everywhere. It was a number one hit off that album. It was a very, 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 very popular song. You know, I have to say, one of the things that always surprised me about Nirvana is how much sound they were able to produce as a trio. I mean, they have a huge sound for just three members of the band. It is really impressive. Go back and listen to Nirvana, and you just get hit by this wall of sound. It's very, very impressive. Now, Nirvana, as we all know, ushered in, you know, an entire genre of music, grunge. And they were, to me, the forefront and really the most representative creator of that style of music. My vote for best song on Nevermind is In Bloom. I mean, I think this song best shows off Cobain's vocal range. You know, musically diverse the song is, but it still remains true to who they are as a band. Now, I have to tell you, one of the things you really forget if you know Dave Grohl from the Foo Fighters, you know, you forget that he was one of the three members of Nirvana. You know it, but you forget it. But what you really forget is what an outstanding drummer he was. Oh my gosh. I mean, if you listen to Dave Grohl play drums for Nirvana on any song, it literally, he stands out. I mean, he's the ultimate pro. He can play anything, it seems like, and he's a perfect rock drummer. So, you know, hat tip to Dave Grohl. He still got it the whole nine. My favorite song that was not released as a single, song called Breed. Most of you who know Nirvana know Breed. I mean, it's driving guitar, drums, powerful vocals. It's a short and sweet powder keg of a song. Nevermind is just a great album. It's really, really, really hard to beat. And it flows so well. It's a really nice, complex, but nice listen. So definitely go back and listen to that when you get a chance. Which brings us to The Black Album by Jay-Z. Folks, The Black Album was released in November of 2003. This was kind of promoted as Jay-Z's retirement album. He was going to drop the mic after this album was released, never to perform again. We know that was not the case. He went on to make several more albums, but who knows if he's going to come back and make another one. He's been quiet for a while now. There were only three singles released from, I believe it's 15 tracks on, no, it's not 15 tracks. It's like 12 or 13 tracks, something like that. But there were only three singles released from The Black Album by Jay-Z. Change Clothes, Dirt on Your Shoulder, and 99 Problems. Now, the interesting thing, I believe all three of those singles were released originally as promotional singles. What is a promotional single? A promotional single is a single that is not for sale to the public. It only gets distributed to DJs and radio stations and video music channels and whatever, so that they can play these songs to promote the album, but not the single. Eventually, I believe, all three were released as singles, but they all three were essentially released as promotional singles. So it's a little hard to track, you know, what was the biggest hit from the Black Album. If you're looking at numbers, you know, SoundScan or Billboard or, you know, weeks at number one. But based off of the research I was able to do, Dirt Off Your Shoulder was the biggest hit from the Black Album, and understandably so. I mean, it's a great song. It's a great, great song. And in so many ways, it was like struck a cultural chord, because people started looking at things differently because of the lyrics in the song. Apparently, you know, President Obama was a huge fan of the song. And used to reference it in some of his, I think, White House correspondence dinner jokes. But Dirt Off Your Shoulder, great, great song. Biggest hit of the album. But I think the best song on the album, obviously, is 99 Problems. It's biographical. It's got a great, great sound. It's pretty, pretty hard to beat. I mean, 99 Problems is what me and my buddies used to listen to when the Black Album first came out. We're listening to Dirt on the Shoulders, right? Dirt Off Your Shoulders. We'd hear that, you know, when you're out. You would hear it at a bar, at a club, whatever. But, you know, you played 99 Problems when you were at the pad or when you were at someone else's house. Now, of course, I'm married with children by then, so I'm not like hanging out with the boys 6 days a week. But when you were, we were listening to 99 Problems. My favorite song off the album that was not released as a single, Public Service Announcement. Folks, it's a great track. I mean, there are other great tracks, Threat, Lucifer. But Public Service Announcement, you know, this is the song that opens with, allow me to reintroduce myself. It's just a great, 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 great song that was not released as a single. I really, really like it. And I have a question for you. Speaking of JC, if you were to pick one of these four songs to play over and over again, which one would you pick? Dirt Off Your Shoulder, 99 Problems, Empire State of Mind, or Run This Town? Folks, which one would you pick? That's four unbelievable songs. If I had to pick one of those four, and I love all four, I think I'd probably go with Run This Town. Run This Town is just, I mean, it was off of Blueprint 3, as was Empire State of Mind. Run This Town is just a great, 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 great song. So let me know what you think about that. I'll be interested to hear. Know what are you drinking tonight, folks? I am actually drinking some bourbon, but it is a repeat from a prior episode. So we're not going to get into that tonight. We will get back to what are you drinking tonight? Very, very soon, I promise. As soon as I run across some worthy product to bring to you, I will do that. Anyway, that is the show for tonight. I want to thank you all for watching. I want to thank you all for listening. We can't do this without you. And obviously, we do this because we enjoy it. And we love interacting with you. So please don't be shy. Let us know what you think. And as always, my name is Cyrus Farmer. This is the Stomp the Tee Podcast. And we'll see you on the first tee.